At Baptist Health, it's our mission to care for you when you're injured or sick and help you stay healthy and fit. Welcome to the Baptist Health Talk Podcast, where our respected experts bring you timely, practical health and wellness information to improve your family's quality of life.
Imagine looking at a photo and you cannot place the person. To you, in that moment, they're a stranger. But in reality, they have been your spouse or child for over 30 years. Dementia is part of the harsh reality millions of Americans are facing, and it's a global problem. It's plagued us for a very long time, but only recently has research begun to crack the code of fighting back. Here to help us remember what we're up against is Peter Glebas, a board-certified neurologist with subspecialty certification in behavioral and cognitive neurology from Marcus Neuroscience Institute, part of Baptist Health. And I'm your host, Dr. Jonathan Fialco, Chief Medical Executive at Baptist Health, South Florida, and a clinical lipidologist. Welcome to the podcast, Peter.
Thank you very much, Jonathan.
So, Peter, dementia is a fairly broad term, kind of a general term, incorporating many different presentations and disease states, some of which we'll discuss during this podcast. But how would you define dementia?
Usually that is a very good question, and usually that's the first question I'm asking my patients, even when I'm talking to them. Do they understand the difference between dementia and, you know, and Alzheimer's disease? Those are usually the ones that frequently getting mixed up. But dementia is not a specific disease. Dementia just tells us that somebody has cognitive problems and enough cognitive problems that starts affecting their independent function. So meaning, you know, it's a spectrum. It could be they start needing help managing their medications, they need help, you know, driving or something. So it's not a specific, it's like an umbrella term, okay? And when we say something dementia, then the next step is for us to try to actually identify what is causing it. While most frequent would be Alzheimer's disease, but there are other causes of dementia, such as vascular dementia, similar.
So do you find most people present on their own saying, I'm concerned because of symptoms, again, which we'll discuss, or do family members and others find it first and say, hey, you know, I'm noticing something, you might want to get it checked out? Who kind of notices the early symptoms?
It's more frequently that it's family members or somebody who knows the person. When you think about it, forgetfulness, memory loss, the nature of the problem is if I don't remember, I don't remember. But other people start noticing that. So it's definitely more coming from other people. But there are patients who are fully in tuned and with their deficits. You know, they start noticing that, you know, the bills are unpaid, you know, or similar things.
So actually, you mentioned the component about, you know, affecting daily life. I mean, like you said, very stressful lives. People have a lot of overwhelming thoughts and responsibilities. There's just normal forgetfulness. But the biggest concern, I guess, people would have is when is me forgetting where my keys are or forgetting that I had an appointment pathological? So, and I'm sure this is a kind of an unfair question because it's kind of vague, but where would you say people should start being concerned and or the family members should start being concerned? We don't want to overly scare people, so to speak, but what are the normal scenarios we see when you find someone, you work them up, that truly there's an organic cause to the dementia?
So you know, the first is trying to define what is a normal aging, normal brain aging, because after the age of 50, after the age of 60, you know, we're not as fast, we're more forgetful. Sometimes, you know, finding word, everybody encounters that. So what is that line? There is, you know, we cannot put that exact line because otherwise then, you know, our screening sensitivity and specificity will start.
Sure.
But if somebody, you know, forgets something, but then they remember it, you know, a minute later or 5 minutes later, or somebody can, you know, has difficult just tip of the tongue situation, those are more likely to be benign. But if anything beyond that, you know, especially if you start forgetting the important events, you had, you know, who you've had dinner with or something like that, that definitely falls out of the normal range.
When you see a patient for a potential dementia workup, I presume you take an extensive history and you ask them a lot of questions. You might do some simple testing in the office. What is the general sense you have at the end of that visit? For example, what I'm saying is you may do some more testing afterwards, but are you pretty good to say, yeah, this is going to be something real, or it's probably not going to be a real organic dementia, even before you've done the testing? In other words, what's the clinical sense that an expert like you would have at the time of that initial evaluation?
I think the, you know, the progression overall and the degree of the problem. Okay. And then, so yes, in the end, I have a sense, but right now, you know, when we're becoming more sophisticated with our diagnosis, using the biomarker study. So just a clinical impression is becoming not enough, but it's important as a first guiding principle. And then, you know, the other part is very important to make sure that we're not over-diagnosing, because people with anxiety disorders or depression, they can be very, very forgetful, but they don't have the neurodegenerative disorders. So that's, you know, that's where that clinical
evaluation. To differentiate. So I do want to talk about a little bit of the testing and some of the therapies currently in, which we're excited about development. But let's get back to the kinds of dementia. You mentioned Alzheimer's as one of the more common, secondarily vascular. Can you unpack those a little bit, the different underlying causes, and do they present the same way, or are there nuances in the presentation between, we'll say, Alzheimer's and a vascular dementia?
Sometimes actually a presentation can be, you know, if to look just, you know, very superficial, it can be very similar, but the raw nuances that are different. Most frequent age-related cause of dementia would be Alzheimer's disease, and that is neurodegenerative disorder. There is a specific biological change that happens in the brain. The normal amyloid starts accumulating. From the studies, it seems like, you know, 10 to 20 years before the first symptoms start. You know, then another protein, tau, there are changes in another protein, tau, and then slowly starts affecting in majority of people the memory areas. That's why it presents with a forgetfulness, but then spreads to the brain as disease progresses. Vascular dementia, it's due to either the clearly defined vascular events such as stroke or bleed in the brain, or due to what we call these slowly progressive ischemic small vessel changes, and it's just more changes in the not necessarily in the neurons itself, but in the connections between the neurons. Both can present with a forgetfulness, but when we look deeper, because memory is also not one single block, there are many steps in memory formation. Which steps are affected can give us a better understanding which disease is actually which process is causing the symptoms.
It's interesting as a lipidologist, some of the data that I'm seeing regarding the components of lipid metabolism and Alzheimer's development, and maybe even therapies down the road, along with many other therapies in place. So obviously there's a confluence in our body of a lot of these risk factors. But what would be, we'll say, the identifiable and maybe preventable risk factors for, we'll say, vascular dementia first, and then what also would we think might be able to decrease our risk of Alzheimer's? And to that question, which I know is a broad one, also speak about the genetic components of the diseases.
Sure. So first, let's talk about the vascular dementia, and those are the cardiovascular risk factors we're talking about. You mentioned lipids, yes, elevated cholesterol, abnormalities in other lipid metabolism, high blood pressure, smoking, anything what's bad for the heart, it's bad for the brain from the vascular standpoint. Now, interestingly, many of those factors also increase the risk of Alzheimer's disease development as well, through which mechanism we're not very clear whether it's through the vascular mechanism or somehow directly, but you know, the diabetes, hypertension, et cetera, are known factors that can contribute to the risk of Alzheimer's disease as well. Other things, the genetics of Alzheimer's disease obviously is very important. The true genetic Alzheimer's disease, so the autosomal dominant, meaning that runs in every family, is very rare. We're talking 1 to 5% of the cases, but there are in certain families we do see that there are more people having the disease than we expect, just based on the prevalence of the disease, and that tells us that might be some risk genes running in through that family. One of the most studied gene would be ApoE gene, which actually is important in cholesterol metabolism. One of the fact, you know, in the brain and the cholesterol metabolism. So having that gene increases the risk of developing the disease at a younger age and developing disease in general.
Yeah, I mean, interesting. I don't want to get too technical regarding cholesterol donation from astrocytes and neurons and stuff like that. But the ApoE4 test was something I was doing as a lipidologist about 12 years ago, 14 years ago. And we stopped because of the need for the genetic education for the ApoE4 with our patients. And now, of course, it's not coming back into favor, but the research supports that there really is validity and components to it. So it is something to speak to one's doctor about if they're interested in determining any genetic risks. On the other hand, it's if you have the risk, then again, it goes back to what are you going to do about it. And as you articulated, the risk factors should be treated, should be identified anyway, right? So sure. If you don't have the gene, you're not going to say, well, I can smoke and I don't have to worry about my blood pressure. So the engagement and the interactions to stay healthy are well said. What about if someone presents with you, and let's say their family member brings a family member to you, and let me rephrase that. What is the general experience? What is the experience one will have when they visit a specialist like you in this area? So explain a little bit, you know, the physical exam, the discussion, and then what kind of tests one could expect.
So if it is an initial evaluation, the probability that history is one of the most important things, because it has to, and don't want to become too detailed, but there are as we age, our brain picks up a lot of many pathologies, not only Alzheimer's or vascular, but all the other things. So you want to make sure that you have what we call the correct clinical phenotype, meaning the correct clinical symptoms. So history is extremely important. One of the first things we want to make sure that we're not missing something that should be treated completely differently, like mood disorder, sleep disorder. The abnormalities in but sometimes people can present with a B12 deficiency that can present with a slowly worsening memory. And from there, then we go, usually we want at least every patient deserves a good scan. If they can't get an MRI, we will get an MRI to make sure that we're not missing some, you know, or silent strokes or tumors or any other abnormalities, and get the detailed good cognitive evaluation, we call it neuropsychological testing, that will give us that clear clinic, the clear what is effect, you know, what are the abnormalities, what was it? Because when people say they're forgetful, it can be so many things. It could be attention problem, working memory problem, true memory problem, word finding deficits, etc. So what does that really mean? And from there on, if it is appropriate, if we don't find anything and we start suspecting that we are dealing with a progressive neurodegenerative condition, then we would go into the biomarker studies, meaning looking for a specific disease. So for Alzheimer's disease, now we do have biomarkers. We can get the special PET scans. We can get the cerebrospinal fluid analysis. You know, blood work is becoming more and more promising. Other diseases, there are more indirect ways for us to look at it. So this would be a very general pathway to the diagnosis.
When a patient comes to you with, we'll say, a forgetfulness or some potential dementia symptoms, what percent would you say, and again, obviously it's biased because by the time they've come to a behavioral and cognitive neurologist, you know, there's a subset of patients who've gone through some basic stuff, but how often would you find a, we'll say, reversible cause or a non, Alzheimer's slash vascular cause? Or by the time they get to you, you're generally going to see some kind of real pathology.
In general, in the memory disorder clinic, actually, interestingly, 20%+ of the cases we see are actually normal cognition, and they come in because, you know, the mood disorder or something like that. The true reversible causes are not very frequent. We screen for them, but they're definitely not frequent. I cannot really tell you the exact number, but it's you know, we always look for it because it's a reversible cause, but we don't find it that frequently.
So then a few quick questions and follow up to those points. Diet. We talked about obviously cardiac risk factors in disease states. So I presume the same dietary recommendations: avoid processed foods, avoid a lot of sugars, keep your weight under control. Are there any specific types of foods or substances that have been associated with dementia more than other chronic diseases?
Yeah, we have so much unknown data here, but you know, truly, what is, you know, when the science tells, it's probably what we call this Mediterranean diet is health. Sure. Is brain friendly or brain protective diet, and we're talking the oils, the, you know, fish and nuts and fruits and vegetables. So that type of diet could help brain protect, you know, or keep that reserve going. But that there is a specific diet that truly is directed against any specific disease, that would be, you know, I can't say that we really have that.
But it would be general, you would recommend kind of that anti-inflammatory type of diet. I believe I described Mediterranean being one of the more prominent ones. What about, And again, I'm going to ask this just because it's out there. Is there any supplement or any type of, we always see these, you know, cognitive enhancers and on TV and stuff. Is there any particular substance that has been actually scientifically proven to be a benefit?
Yeah, it's a very frequent question. And, you know, it's either science is so weak or non-existent, you know, behind any of those.
Right. Right. Fair enough. So if someone does have those concerns, they should get seen by a doctor and potentially referred for a specialist and do it the right way, if you will, because there's a lot of misinformation out there and perhaps false promises. What are the current drugs or treatments? Where are we at right now? I know it's kind of, I don't want to say it's an exciting age when we're dealing with the pathology, but it is in terms of how we're approaching these disease states and what we can offer people. And where do you see things going?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm probably going to talk more about Alzheimer's disease because, you know, that's
And if I could interrupt for a second, and the vascular dementia, again, to at least stave off the process of development, would be the same as your vascular recommendations, as you said elsewhere. So,
For Alzheimer's, we now, you know, we have FDA-approved treatments for this, you know, to try to address the specific disease pathological process. And we already have treatments that clear the amyloid, that one of the components of the Alzheimer's disease, out of the brain. And you know, the studies have shown that the at least one medication we have approved right now by FDA, that it did slow down the disease progression in the people who were studied as a group, but there were subgroup analysis that showed that, and maybe there are subgroups of people where it really significantly slowed down or even stopped the disease progression. Again, that data is still being processed, so that's very exciting. There are another research coming, you know, on the another component, the tau component. Also, if you started early enough, it seems like, at least from the research studies, that people can significantly slow down or stop their disease progression. So that is very, very exciting. You know, we're talking here about probably one of the most common neurodegenerative disorder out there. When it comes to vascular, you mentioned, you know, it's a vascular cardiovascular risk factor management. When it comes to other diseases, such as dementia of Lewy bodies or frontotemporal dementia, there is a lot of research, but we're not there, you know, to have the disease modifying therapy.
Actually, before we wind up with some final comments, let's get into that a little bit. I know the term early onset dementia is a subset of dementia and maybe Lewy bodies. So actually, if you could just mention what are those two terms, early onset dementia and the Lewy body, just for the reference out there. I know Lewy bodies are relatively infrequent, but people tend to overemphasize the risk when they hear things. But if you could actually speak to those two a little bit.
And there is a lot of, you know, confusion when it comes to terminology, because we prefer sometimes to use the young onset dementia, somebody who is younger than 65, and then, you know, the late onset dementia, because early onset or early dementia can also mean just a stage. Okay, somebody is at the early stages of their disease. The cutoff we use is age 65. That's when people retire. Initially, it was purely just because of this, you know, the social cutoff. But then, when we look actually, biology might be different as well. As you know, in younger onset dementia, we might have more more of the frontotemporal dementia or the types of dementia might be more frequent as opposed to the later onset dementia where, you know, it's primarily Alzheimer's disease, vascular Lewy body disorder. Though Alzheimer's disease in younger onset, it's still one of the most frequent disorders. So
again, these are, you know, the term dementia, as you mentioned, an umbrella term in your early comments. It is not something to be necessarily fearful of when people start forgetting things or have a slip of memory, especially as one ages. But if one's concerned and or family members notice a particular change, certainly get it checked out. And the earlier one gets it checked out, the better we can determine what the cause is and potentially stem the progression of this otherwise potentially devastating disease.
Absolutely.
So this is a great...
To add one more thing about the terminology, because people might encounter that dementia is one of the, you know, that's how we frequently refer to the condition, but the DSM-5 defines it as a major neurocognitive disorder, so those are synonymous term, and the mild cognitive impairment is that pre-dementia stage is the minor neurocognitive disorder. So again, just terminology could be it means this, you know, the same things, but can be confusing.
Well said. Any final comments you'd like to add to that before we wrap up, or anything you want to reemphasize regarding our conversations?
So final comment is that, you know, seeing the research and the therapeutics that are coming out for these disorders, actually, I can honestly say I'm very optimistic about where we're moving. Yes, maybe not fast enough, but but very optimistic.
Again, great words and somewhat comforting, and appreciate all the work you and your teams are doing towards helping people and families manage this disease. So thanks again, Dr. Peter Glebas from the Marcus Neuroscience Institute.
Jonathan, thank you. It was my pleasure.
To our listeners, if you like what you heard on this or any of our other podcasts, please be sure to tell a friend or a family member about us. If you have a comment or a suggestion for a future topic, please email us at baptisthealthtalk@baptisthealth.net. That's baptisthealthtalk@baptisthealth.net. We'd love to hear from you, and thanks for listening.
Find additional valuable health and wellness information on our resource blog at baptisthealth.net/news. And be sure to interact with us on our social media channels for live and upcoming events. This podcast is brought to you by Baptist Health, the warmer side of care.